The Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer trademark is shown with a lion at its center. Angels in the outfield. A United States flag waves gently in a breeze over a baseball field. The sky is filled with clouds, and the city skyline stretches across the distance. A huge scoreboard is at the edge of the field, and crowds of people fill the stands as the players take the field. Some stride casually to take their places in the outfield. The rest of the team members take their positions on the infield. Bleachers stretch from the third baseline, around home plate, and down the first baseline, with the outfield being open, except for a wooden fence. Through the kind cooperation of the Pittsburgh Pirates, we have used the team and its ballpark to tell our story. But we do not depict any real characters or actual events. This could be any baseball team, in any league, in any town in America.
This is Forbes Field in Pittsburgh. And this is our national pastime, the game of baseball, as played by the Pittsburgh Pirates.
A player rounds second, turns back, and runs into his teammate. A woman is sitting in the press box.
I didn't know a thing about baseball. My usual job was writing the household hints column on the ladies' page. But the paper was running a series of articles, What's Wrong with the Pirates? The sports editor wanted the woman's angle. All I knew was that Pittsburgh was losing. This, I learned, was quite normal.
In the sixth inning, Cincinnati is winning 14-2. The young woman frowns. A batter hits a grounder to the third baseman, and a runner is out at second. Players crowd around the umpire, and the coach storms out of the dugout.
The manager of the Pirates was a large man named Guffey McGovern, who was always coming out to discuss things with the umpire. I was too far away to hear, but he seemed upset, irritated, maybe even angry.
All right, Guffey, you ain't safe by that much. You're a silly story, coach. Ball up the rail and out.
The umpire turns his back as McGovern screams at him.
All right, Guffey, watch your line or I'll throw you out of the game.
McGovern sets his jaw, and the veins in his neck stick out.
There was certainly something wrong with the Pirates. Take that time when Cincinnati was batting, and that Pirate player got hit in the head with the ball. That didn't seem right.
McGovern screams from the dugout. A Pirate hits, and runners advance.
And later in the game, when the Pirates were hitting and had a good chance to score, well, even I knew three runners on one base was too many.
Get out! Get out! Hey,
it's the first time you three guys have been together all season.
McGovern takes off his baseball cap and slaps it back onto his head. The young woman laughs with the other reporters and the fans.
The score at the end of the game was Cincinnati 21, Pittsburgh 2.
She stands.
You through, Jenny?
I haven't even started. How do you get a story out of that?
Well, you hit them on a bad day.
Yeah,
they had a good one back in 1938.
Hey, maybe I should talk to McGovern, huh?
Now?
Well, yeah, that's a wonderful idea. Everybody should talk to McGovern at least once.
Well, how do I get down there?
Well, you see that second tunnel down there?
Yeah.
Go down through that. The first door on the right is the entrance to the Pirate Clubhouse.
Oh, thanks. And thanks for letting me sit here.
Anytime. And, Jen, give Guffey our best regards.
I will. Bye.
Bye.
What a dirty trick.
She leaves, passing a man with a mustache, talking on a microphone.
So ends another Holocaust in Forbes Field. The Pirates' exhibition of skill this afternoon, reducing their standing to seventh place in the National League. By the way, I'll not be with you for the balance of the season. It seems in the course of my sportscast, I have somehow offended the great Guffey McGovern, alleged manager of the Pirates. Steps have been taken, and briefly, your announcer has been canned. I'll still have my regular Tuesday night broadcast and Wednesday television, and I shall continue to call the plays as I see them. This is Fred Bales saying thank you, Guffey McGovern.
His announcing partner raises his arms in a wide shrug. Jenny makes her way down a ramp and hurries toward a tunnel to the Pirates' dressing room. A sign reads, No admittance. She opens a door and goes down a hallway. She passes a security guard at the dressing room door.
No, Jenny, you can't win there.
Fred.
No, Jenny, Mr.
McGovern, please. Does he come out this way?
When he's dressed, he does.
I'd like a story, so I think I'll wait.
Lady, he just lost a ball game, 21-2. He's unhappy.
He can't win all the time.
She sits in the hallway.
I would like to say a few words about today's endeavor with the Cincinnati's. Of all the stud moves,
as Jenny listens, her eyes widen and her mouth gapes open. She looks up at the guard, then slowly stands and backs away from the open door. She turns and runs. Later, she's with Ed Kearney, the sports editor.
Personally, I think it was a waste of time to send me. I don't know the game and I haven't any story. But I can tell you what's wrong with the Pirates, all right. That McGovern person. Of all the loud mouth, offensive, and all those nice, clean-cut young men, and the way he bullies them. No wonder they make mistakes. Anybody would. But if you ask me, the Pittsburgh Pirates would be a lot better off without him. And so would the city of Pittsburgh.
Hey, write it.
Write what?
What you think about McGovern.
But he'd sue us.
Buddy, compared to his real character, it'll read like a testimonial. Do your worst, and let me see it when you finish.
Well...
Jenny leaves the editor's office. She removes her white gloves, and she slowly crosses to another office marked Household Hints Editor and Obituary Editor, and sits at a desk.
Hi, Jen.
Hi.
Household Hints, Obituary Department. 12 more people kicked off today.
How is the game? Anybody die out there?
Just the Pirates.
Listen to this. Ignatius A. Turnbull, aged 77 years, passed away at his home today following a... What a depressing job.
Think about me. I have to write about Guffey McGovern.
Now, there's an obituary I'd like to hand.
Later in Ed Kearney's office.
Mr. Kearney must have liked the story. He even put my byline on it. By Jennifer Page, Household Hints Editor. He wanted more of the same. Personal stuff about McGovern. I realized I'd have to do a little sleuthing. I found out where he lived. One furnished room and kitchenette near the ballpark. He had no known relatives, never any visitors.
Later, she is outside a building.
Every morning, about 11 o'clock, he left for the field.
She steps around a corner as McGovern approaches.
There were plenty of empty cabs cruising around, but McGovern wanted the one without the driver. He would.
He gets inside and reaches across the cab. The driver leaves the store.
You know the law, sonny. You're supposed to stay with your cab at all times. Are you with it? Bob's field and make it snappy.
Oh, the bumps don't start until 1:30.
Later, he is yelling on the field.
His afternoons were spent like this. The only place he was seen in public outside the ballpark was John's Steakhouse. They had the best steaks in town.
A waiter puts a bottle of ketchup, a steak, and a cup of coffee on McGovern's table.
Medium rare.
McGovern cuts into the steak. He taps his glass, and the waiter pours water from a carafe. The waiter pauses for a moment at the table, then leaves. Jenny and the obituary editor are at a table on the far side of the room. Jenny leans forward to watch McGovern.
I'm going over and talk to him.
The editor chokes on his coffee.
You'll make a nice item tomorrow. Jennifer Page, age 24, departed this world at approximately...
Oh, stop. I came here to corner him, didn't I? Well, there he is, cornered.
She leaves the table.
Waiter, a brandy for the lady.
Yes, sir.
Jenny slowly walks toward McGovern as he chews his steak and cuts another bite. She glances back at the editor, then knocks on McGovern's tabletop. He looks up.
I'm Jennifer Page.
He returns to his meal.
Jennifer Page, I wrote that story about you this morning. In the Messenger.
He ignores her.
You didn't read it?
All I ever read is a box score.
Well, I began this way. Quote, Aloysius X. McGovern, the evil-tongued order of the baseball field, is a surly, unbred goat whose mouth should be washed out regularly with a strong detergent.
Don't ever call me Aloysius.
You're not mad?
Dogs have fleas, managers have sports writers.
Oh, I'm not a sports writer. I do household hints for the ladies' page. But I have a few facts and figures about you. Oh, don't put so much ketchup on the steak. It spoils the flavor. A few statistics that might be interesting. For instance, last season, Minnelli had a batting average of .310. This year he had .210. Now that's 100 points difference. Doesn't it prove something?
I'll have to speak to Minnelli.
Crookshank's average is way down too, 93 points. And Minden's and Beggs, and it's the same right through the whole batting list.
Where'd you gather this information?
Tim Durney helped me. He's the obituary editor.
What do you hear from want ads?
Well, I realize figures can be misleading, but when an entire team goes as sour as the Pirates, well, I look around for a reason, and I look right at you.
He glares.
What do you have to say, Mr. McGovern?
He finishes chewing his steak, wipes his mouth with his napkin, takes her pencil and paper, and writes. He folds the paper several times and hands it back to her. He stares at her, then nods when she leaves without opening the note. He douses his steak with ketchup as she returns to her table.
What'd he say?
Tim offers her the brandy. She looks down at the folded paper and taps it nervously with her fingertips. She slowly opens it and reads, then closes it quickly. She glares over at McGovern, who grins. She puts the note down and rests her chin on the palm of her hand. Tim opens the note and reads. Boo.
Boo?
Later, Fred Bales approaches a hat check girl, and McGovern walks up behind him.
Well, well, Guffey McGovern. How are things in seventh place?
Fine, fine. What do you do with your afternoons now, Junior?
Thanks to you, I just signed a deal to broadcast for the Giants, who, as you may have heard, are leading the league. Meanwhile, I'm just lying around thinking of things to say about you. Why don't you catch me tonight? I'm on the air in an hour.
I can't wait.
I got a mission in life now, Guffey. I'm going to run you out of this town. Maybe right out of organized baseball.
You wouldn't do that.
Oh, yes, I would. I'm a stinker.
Why don't we talk this over? Let's slip in here a minute. I got an exclusive for you.
The hat check girl holds out two hats, then watches as McGovern and Bales enter the men's room and close the door. The door opens, and Bales is flat on his back. McGovern steps over Bales' limp foot as he walks to the hat check girl, gets his hat, and leaves.
Take me out to the ball game.
She gently puts Bales' hat back on the shelf and puts it into place. Later in a studio, Bales is at a microphone with a swollen jaw.
Before I say goodnight, I would like to reiterate. My opinions are those of an unbiased observer who has the best interest of baseball at heart. There is nothing personal in my feud with Guffey McGovern.
He touches his mouth with a handkerchief.
Incidentally, don't look for me on television tomorrow.
At a ball game. A batter hits to left field and runs to first. Jenny's with the reporters in the press box.
By asking questions, I began to learn baseball. Question, what is a balk? Answer, see me tomorrow. Question, what is a rhubarb? Answer.
A reporter points down at the field. Jenny watches as both dugouts empty and players rush to second base. McGovern and the Cincinnati coach are yelling at each side of the umpire. McGovern punches the coach.
Good, McGovern, you're out of the game.
McGovern pushes his chest out defiantly, then walks away. Fans in the stand get to their feet as McGovern storms back to the dugout and the players slowly leave second base. McGovern stops at the baseline and glares into the stands, his fists clenched. As he continues to the dugout, the fans clap in time with his steps. Later, players enter the dressing room.
And there you have it. Final score, Cincinnati 9, Pittsburgh 0. The Pirates had a total of 3 hits, 7 errors. The Reds, 14 hits.
Don't be so modest, Baxter. You made 2 of those errors all by yourself.
A player falls to his knees.
Why, what's the matter, Mr. Minden? Did you think that was second base? Certainly proud of you athletes today. Particularly you, Mr. Ronson. Our schoolboy star, the pride of Milwaukee High. But I worry about you, son. You're going to catch a fly ball some of these days and knock out your front teeth.
Ronson turns away. McGovern tightens his lips and looks around at the room.
Ah, Crooksy. Crooksy, you were fine. You didn't fall down once.
And here we have the famous Saul Hellman, our relief pitcher. You fellas may not believe this, but Saul once pitched a two-hitter in a World Series. Of course, that was quite some time ago. But he's still in there pitching. One walk and four hits on 10-pitch balls. Don't you think you're a little old for this pastime, Saul? You should have quit winners when you could still reach the plate.
Jesus, Saul.
Men get between Saul and McGovern walks away.
I'm glad for one thing. Today's game puts us in eighth place. We can go no lower in this league.
At least have a guy like that in the three I did once. Used to put gunpowder in his cigarettes. Hey, has McGovern always been like this? You knew him in the minors, didn't you, way back when? Well, what I mean is, you know, when you were first breaking in.
You could say it. 16 years ago.
Ah, you have got plenty of stuff left. Plenty.
Sure.
Where's my good luck piece?
I put it in your uniform.
Well, where is it?
And you dropped it out on the field.
McGovern glares. Later, he walks out of the dugout onto the dark field. He looks around, searching near the first baseline, scuffing the turf with his foot. Shown from the upper bleachers, he walks toward second and kneels to feel along the edge of the base. He stands and looks around the empty stadium.
Of all the empty heads, but of plenty of ears, not tattooed heads, let them look east. You must play here, so you must play good.
Oh, shut up.
He stiffens and looks around.
What?
Close your fat mouth, I want to talk to you.
If that's some wise guy on a PA system, I'll bust his snoot.
You'll bust nobody's snoot if you know what's good for you. You've been busting snoots and polluting the air with your foul talk long enough, McGovern. Frankly, we're fed up.
Do tell, and who are you, may I ask?
An angel.
How's that?
I'm an angel.
Well, you must be very proud. Let me get my hands on him. I'll make him an angel.
Oh, you're cold, McGovern. I never sit in the field boxes.
Where do you sit?
Usually on the right hand of the Archangel Gabriel. That name mean anything to you?
Sure, sure, Gabriel, trumpet player.
None of your lip, Guffy, or I'll boot you over the center field wall. I can get just as tough as you remember that.
I'll murder this guy!
He searches the dugout.
Cold, Guffy. Oh, colder still.
He walks up the dugout steps to the field, scratching his forehead and looks up.
Now you're getting warm.
He clenches his fists.
Keep talking.
The angel Gabriel's taken a personal interest in you, Big Mouth. It seems someone down there's been sending up a lot of prayers on your behalf.
Somebody praying for me. Gee. One punch, that's all I ask. One punch.
Before he answers those prayers, he'd like to clean you up a little, and I'm stuck with the job. Now, there's certain rules, McGovern. I'll give them to you fast. Number one, cut out the blasphemy. Number two, start treating your fellow men with a little more respect and understanding. Quit making life miserable for everybody around you. Number three, and this is important, love and stop slugging thy neighbor. You hear me?
I hear you fine. Why can't I see you for one moment?
Because I usually stay as far away from you as possible.
The bleachers.
Stay where you are. Stand still and listen or I'll blast you with a bolt of lightning.
He stops in his tracks and looks up at one small white cloud.
Now, don't rile me, boy. Just behave yourself, and we'll get along fine. As a matter of fact, I'll make a deal with you. Lay off swearing and fighting, and I'll win you some ball games. I might even win you a pennant. You'd like to win a pennant again, wouldn't you, McGovern? All right, you play ball with me, and I'll play ball with you. How about that?
How do I know you're what you say you are?
Thunder and lightning's not enough, huh? All right, Aloysius, you trusting soul. Look for a miracle tomorrow night in the third inning.
What kind of a miracle?
Tomorrow night, in the third inning.
Hey, where are you? Wait a minute.
He looks up, and his mouth gapes open as a single white feather drifts down to second base and lands beside a small item. McGovern picks the item up, looks heavenward, and fingers the good luck charm that was resting on second base. Later, the stadium is lit up for a night game, and players are on the field in front of a packed house. A batter swings and misses. The game with Cincinnati is scoreless in the top of the third at Forbes Field. The pitcher winds up and throws. The batter hits a fly ball deep into the outfield near the wall. The fielder catches it, rolls on the ground, and throws the ball in. McGovern's eyes bug out.
Ronson.
The pitcher faces another batter and winds up. The batter hits to the shortstop, and a runner is forced out at second. The batter is tagged sliding into first. McGovern blinks hard as the crowd responds to the play. His cheeks puff out as he exhales, and he looks upward. The scoreboard shows a scoreless game going into the bottom of the third, with Pittsburgh coming to bat. The pitcher winds up. The batter takes a ball, and McGovern watches from the field. Number four hits the ball and rounds first, heading for second base. He continues running in a loping stride, shaking hands with the third base coach as he heads for home. Players and coaches shake hands with him as he crosses the base and goes into the dugout. McGovern folds his arms across his chest with a knowing smile. Another batter hits for Pittsburgh and races to first. The crowd is on their feet as the third batter positions himself in the box. He hits the ball, and the runner advances to third.
Safe.
The pitcher watches the runner on second and takes a slight lead toward third base. The batter runs to first as Ronson steps to the plate with the bases loaded. The pitcher looks back at second base and throws. Ronson hits a long fly ball, and the center fielder gets under it. The right fielder joins him as Pittsburgh runners tear around the bases. Four Cincinnati players stare upward, waiting for a ball to fall out of the sky. As runners cross home plate, the ball drops between the fielders. A fielder picks it up and starts to throw it, but stops when he sees the last runner cross the plate. McGovern rubs his chin and looks upward with a boyish grin. Pittsburgh is leading 5-0. Another batter is at the plate. He runs to first. McGovern stomps to the umpire.
I was about to suggest that possibly you erred on that decision.
Get off the field!
Yes.
The umpire scratches his head as McGovern walks away. Something unseen kicks McGovern in the rump.
Nice going, Big Mouth.
McGovern smiles with a quick nod. The scoreboard reads, Pittsburgh 12, Cincinnati 0. A train speeds along a track as the screen reads, St. Louis, Sportsman's Park.
The Pirates had come to life. On the road, they won 10 games straight. And stranger still, McGovern was a changed man. He hadn't punched his soul in 2 weeks.
A headline reads, Pirates smash ahead. Team standing upped again. The train moves on to New York and Polo Grounds. In a game against the Giants, the Pirates win 5-0. A headline reads, Pirates blast Giants.
The team was in sixth position when they played the Braves in Boston. It was the last inning. The Pirates were winning 8-6. A hard-fought game.
McGovern makes his way into a crowd of players on the field and faces the men.
Now, I'll handle this. Let me...
Get out of my way, you bow-legged ape! You fat on after me, you fucking ape!
The Pirates lose 9-8. Later at night, McGovern is kneeling on second base looking upward.
Well, McGovern, you sure talked your way out of that one. 10 straight games, and then you had to go and blow it.
Now, look.
Take off your hat.
He removes his hat and slowly stands.
Yes, sir. All I said this afternoon...
I heard what you said. Don't repeat it.
Now, look, the guy called me an ape.
Bow-legged ape?
Yeah.
You are a little bow-legged.
What am I supposed to do? Take it as a compliment? Don't I get a chance to talk back?
Certainly. The English language has a total of 698,000 words. We ask you to avoid 0.01% of these, which at the moment seems to be your entire vocabulary.
I'll be tongue-tied.
Shakespeare wasn't. Nor Milton or Robert Burns. Study, McGovern, study.
Okay, I keep my trap shut. I win all my games, huh?
Now, wouldn't that look a little silly? The Pirates winning every game?
Yes, it would.
Besides, we have other things to do. A lot of time, you'll be on your own. And when you need us, we'll be in there pitching.
Who's we?
Me and my boys, the Heavenly Choir Nine.
Ball players?
Sure.
In heaven?
Oh, there's plenty of ball players in heaven.
What do you know?
But very few managers.
Oh. How do your boys help?
Oh, they sort of get behind your boys, throw out a few quick hunches.
Who's on your squad, the Heavenly Choirs?
Now, we won't go into that, but I don't mind telling you that we have a team batting average of .331.
Good club.
Not bad.
When your boys played baseball down here, did I know any of them? Did I know you?
We might have run into each other.
On what base? Come on, a guy's got a right to know his own angel. Just give me a hint. What team were you with? What position?
All right, lay off, McGovern. Your broken-down ball club is winning ball games. What more do you want? I'll see you around, huh?
Now, wait, listen.
Goodbye, McGovern. Keep your nose out of things that don't concern you.
All right. Don't go away sore, huh?
Later on the train, McGovern is sitting in the dining car reading Shakespeare's Comedy of the Tempest. His right elbow is on the table, and his head is resting against his hand as he frowns thoughtfully at the book. Ronson knocks the book to the floor as he passes.
Sorry, Mr. McGovern.
Oh, it's all right. Sit down, son.
Well, I told Minnelli I'd have dinner with him.
Hey, you made that catch today. How come you were laying so far to your right?
I don't know. I had sort of a feeling Johnson had hit it there.
A left-hander? He never hit there in his life.
I don't know. Just call it a hunch.
McGovern returns to his book. Ronson looks at a page and reads The Tempest by William Shakespeare. Act 2, Scene 1. He lifts one eyebrow and joins three players at another table.
He's reading Shakespeare.
Go on.
The Tempest. I had it in English 3. He asked me to sit down with him.
Yeah, this morning he said hello. I don't like it, boys. It isn't natural.
He hasn't changed. He's just charging his batteries. Waiter.
Yes, sir.
Did you do what they said?
Yes, sir. This all right?
The waiter shows a steak.
You're sure it's tough enough? Mr. Baxter, this was cut right from between the horns.
The four players laugh and turn to watch as the waiter carries the steak to McGovern. McGovern clears a place for the covered tray, and the waiter puts it on the table and uncovers it. McGovern transfers the meat to his plate and frowns as he tries to cut it. He saws at it with his knife while two tables of players watch from behind him.
Hey, Saul.
Yeah?
Pull up a chair.
Thanks, but I'd like to digest my dinner.
You did all right in the old days. Remember how we used to tear around?
I don't want to think about the old days. I don't want to think about you. Do you mind?
Saul walks away, and McGovern looks down solemnly. He grimaces as he slices off a bite of steak, puts it in his mouth, and begins to chew. The players watch as the waiter steps to McGovern's table.
Your steak all right, sir?
It's a wee bit tough, but it has a very nice flavor.
The players turn to exchange looks with each other. Later at a game.
When the Pirates played their next game in Pittsburgh, it started out just like any other afternoon. But events were taking shape in the bleacher section. Some orphan kids in on passes had come to cheer for the home team. It was a regular weekly event.
A nun approaches the guard.
Who's pitching, Mrs. Smalley?
Not you, sister.
1-4, lost 6.
She motions, and a group of little girls sit in the bleachers. She and a second nun take their seats. The first nun is seated beside a little girl with pigtails.
Come on, Martin. Stay in there and keep it high. If he feeds it to Modbury Low, he'll put it right in our laps.
Dear. Don't worry about Martin. He's super. Let's go, Marty. Show him what you did in Boston.
Pass the peanuts, dear.
The little girl takes a peanut and passes them on. A batter runs to first.
There!
McGovern marches onto the field and faces the umpire on the first baseline.
Fair ball.
Why, thou knave, thou dolt, thou hast eyes but seest not.
You heard him. He said fire.
Fire upon you and a pox upon you, too. Thou art blind, thou black-livered bat.
The hamlet blows.
The umpire motions toward the dugout with his thumb, and McGovern walks away.
Now, let's get it. Come on.
Not aboard, Joe.
He shrugs heavenward.
The Orphan kids cheered for the Pirates all through the game, but they were losing. It was the sixth inning. The score, 7-2 in favor of the Phillies. Things were looking bad for the Pirates. Then suddenly it happened.
A little girl's eyes widen as she points at the field.
Look! Look at the angel behind Mandaker.
What did you say, dear?
And there's one behind Lawson, too. From Rothberg and Resendi. There's one in back of everybody.
One what?
Angel!
The first nun feels the child's forehead.
Get her out of the sun. Come along, Bridget.
The second nun steps into the aisle with Bridget and is later fanning her with a program under the bleachers.
How do you feel, dear?
Feel fine.
The second nun returns to the seats with the little girl. Bridget takes her place beside the first nun.
There they are again!
Bridget, there are people sitting behind you.
But I see them! Angels!
The kid is seeing angels!
Ain't nothing to what I've seen sometimes.
Look! Shh! You'll get us in trouble.
Bridget, that's enough.
But I see him, sister, big as life. In the outfield, in the infield. And there's one sitting on the scoreboard.
Are you having trouble, sister?
Nothing I can't take care of, thank you. Bridget, do you want to leave again and not come back?
No, sister.
Then let's have no more angels.
Bridget nods, then slowly points around the field with her finger and mouths. One, two, three, four. She points at the scoreboard and mouths five. She stops when the nun looks at her.
The Pirates won again, 10-7. It was getting to be a habit. On the way out, I ran into Smalley, the park cop. He told me about the little girl in the bleachers, an orphan who saw angels. I had my story for the day.
At McGovern's.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the frame.
He uncovers a birdcage.
Hello, Joe.
Good morning.
McGovern opens his front door and picks up a newspaper.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
A headline reads, Angels help Pirates win. Says Orphan Moppet. Says McGovern team gets celestial aid in defeating Phillies. McGovern grabs his coat and hurries out. Later, he rings a doorbell at St. Gabriel's Home for Orphaned Girls. He waits with the newspaper in his hand as the door opens and a second nun looks up at him.
Yes?
I'd like to see a little girl.
Come in, please.
He goes inside and looks up at a painting of Jesus as a child in the temple. The statue of a winged angel is positioned on a pedestal beside a wooden staircase.
What age?
About 8, I guess.
That would be 3rd grade, my class.
She takes a few steps, then turns to face him.
Would you wait just a moment, please?
He nods as she walks down a tiled hallway to a door and goes into a classroom. Several little girls are at their desks.
Children, there's a gentleman here. He's looking for a little girl.
A girl behind Bridget removes her glasses. The second nun opens the classroom door. She snaps her fingers, and McGovern enters the room. He follows her down an aisle and looks at the little girls at their desks. As he turns and looks around the room, Bridget stands with a smile.
Why, Mr. McGovern?
I think she's the one. I'd like to talk to you.
I think you should talk to some of the others, too. We have some very nice girls here.
Sure.
What is it, sister? Mr. McGovern?
Well, how do you do? I came about the story in the paper.
Yes, I read it.
Is this the kid that... Is she the little girl who saw the angels? I just want to ask her a couple of questions.
The second nun turns to Bridget.
Bridget, wait in my office.
Yes, sister.
Bridget leaves the room, glancing back as she steps into the hall.
Thank you, sister. Mr. McGovern, will you come with me, please?
He follows the second nun out. The girl with the glasses sighs, puts her glasses back on, and begins to read. McGovern and the first nun step outside the classroom.
I'm Sister Adwitha, Mother Superior. How the paper got the story, I have no idea. But I think it's best for all concerned that we just forget it.
Yes. Well, sister, excuse me, but you don't know baseball, baseball fans. A thing like this gets started, it becomes a big McGillin. Oh, McGill is a sort of a...
federal case.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, the fans want answers, and I'm the manager, and I've got to supply them.
A little girl sits too long in the sun without her hat on, and she thinks she sees something. Surely you don't believe they were angels.
Well, me? Would it do any harm just to talk to her?
I don't want the child excited.
Oh, I won't, I promise.
Well, just one moment.
He follows her.
Oh, there's one other thing.
Yes?
In the seventh inning, yesterday afternoon, when Rockford was on third, why didn't you try a squeeze?
They were expecting it.
Well, that's just it. They were expecting it. And they knew that you knew that they were expecting it, so you wouldn't pull it. Why, it would be completely unexpected. Rothberg's fast. He'd have made home easily.
Yeah, well, Rothberg happens to have a bad ankle. He hurt it in practice.
Oh, well, I'll light a candle for him.
She opens a door.
Will you just go along in, excuse me?
She goes to the front door, and he goes into her office. Bridget is sitting in a leather chair near the statue of an angel. She stands as he enters.
Hiya.
Hi.
He opens the paper and motions for her to sit down.
You read this?
She stares at the paper and shakes her head.
It says yesterday you saw angels, did you?
She nods.
Are you sure?
She nods again.
Did you ever see angels before?
She shakes her head.
How'd you know there were angels?
They looked like angels.
With wings?
Sort of like wings.
Not baseball uniforms.
Sort of like uniforms.
What color socks?
I couldn't see. Their robes were too long.
He kneels in front of Rachel and swallows hard.
How many were there?
One behind each player. The Pirates, I mean. One on the scoreboard and one in the bullpen.
Was there one behind me?
Mm-hmm.
Is he there now?
She looks in back of McGovern and shakes her head.
Who's that?
He looks at the statue.
That's St. Gabriel.
Figures.
He leans on a desk and shoves his hands into his pockets.
Now, about these sort of like uniforms, was there any writing across the chest, like New York maybe, or Cardinals or Dodgers?
It wasn't a whole name. Just initials.
Well, what initials?
H.C.
He jumps to his feet wide-eyed.
Heavenly Choir.
What?
Nothing. About these other kids. They didn't see anything, huh? Just you.
She nods.
Well, why was that, you suppose?
Maybe because I've been praying for you.
Me? You've been praying for me?
The whole team.
How long have you been praying?
Ever since you hit the slump.
You must have been praying pretty hard, huh?
Oh, yes. Every night and every morning. And sometimes during arithmetic.
That's very nice. Thanks.
Well, you needed help, didn't you?
We sure did.
I prayed to St. Gabriel personally. He's our patron saint.
Good man, Gabriel. What's your name?
Bridget White, 8 years old.
How long have you been here?
8 years.
His face turns solemn as he stares down at the little girl.
I have to shove off now, Bridget. It's been nice talking to you. So long.
So long.
They shake hands, and he walks toward the door.
Oh, Bridget, about those prayers. Keep them coming.
She nods as he leaves. She walks to the statue with a smile.
He's nice, isn't he?
Reporters are with Sister Edwitha.
No, you can't see her. I'm sorry. Now, please go away.
We won't hurt the kids, sister.
The whole story is ridiculous.
No angels, said Sister Edwitha. Can we quote that?
Don't you dare.
Sister?
Don't you print that picture, young man.
Evening Post, sister. It's a beauty.
The governor hurries to the door as reporters come in.
Oh, hiya, Guffy. How's the angel?
Now, let me out of here, will you?
The other reporters rush to McGovern.
How about a steady, Guffy?
No comment.
Maybe he believes in him, too. How about it?
Yeah, what are you doing here, Guffy? Where's your heart?
Lay off me, will you? You want to know about angels? Ask her. She wrote the story. Look out, now I'm getting out of here.
The reporters crowd around Jenny, and McGovern leaves. He hurries down the orphanage steps. He stops and looks up.
Now what did I do?
Raindrops splatter on his face and suit. He touches his cheek with his hand and smiles.
Oh, nothing personal, eh?
He puts on his hat, pulls up his coat collar, and hurries through the rain to a cab. Later, he is looking out his apartment window at the rain. He checks his watch and tosses a baseball into a mitt. He goes to the door and opens it to Jenny.
Well, Miss Household Hints, what can I do for you?
You can listen while I say I'm sorry.
She enters.
Honestly, I had no idea that story would raise such a fuss. If I had, I never would have... What a mess this place is. I never would have written it. Your mistake was in showing up at that orphanage. The newspapers are going to make a monkey out of you.
Goat, monkey, I'm used to it.
If I were you, I'd protect myself, McGovern. Make a statement.
To you?
Why not?
He looks down.
Miss Page, you're ruining my carpet.
She removes her shoes.
Don't be afraid of mud stains. They're very easy to take out. Here, do you mind? Stuff them with newspaper, turn on the oven, and put them underneath.
He carries her shoes into the kitchen.
What kind of a parrot is this?
It's a parrot.
Does it talk?
Yes.
Did you teach it?
Yes.
Rest my head, please.
Wow. He's very polite, isn't he?
Why shouldn't he be?
What else does he say?
He says, hello, how have you been, and goodbye. Joe, say goodbye to the lady.
Bye.
That's wonderful. But doesn't he ever... Well, with you teaching him...
Miss Page, a man only swears when he's annoyed. Joe never annoys me. We're very happy together, Joe and I.
Well, frankly, I don't see how you can be in a shambles like this. How do you ever find anything?
She straightens a picture on a wall. He turns it at a crooked angle and nods sharply.
There isn't even a place for a guest to sit down.
There might be an idea in that.
Well, you can't get rid of me just yet, so you might as well make the best of it. You know, I've always wondered what baseball players did on rainy afternoons.
Entertain lady reporters who drop in uninvited.
Well, you're not being very entertaining. What about the story of your life, McGovern, while my shoes are drying? Were you always so tough?
He stares out the window.
Even when you were little?
He ignores her.
You had a boyhood, of course. Tilton Falls, Wisconsin. I looked you up. Sounds like a nice little town.
It was. 4 pool halls, 5 saloons, and the biggest pants factory in the state.
Did you play ball there?
I sold peanuts.
Oh, your folks weren't very well off, huh?
My folks did fine. They had one of the saloons.
And one day, they gave you a ball and a bat, and that's how you got started.
Not exactly. I used to throw snowballs at the cop on the corner. It was a long block and a long winter, so I finished up a third baseman. Any more down memory lane stuff you'd like?
Are you cooking something?
He hurries to open the oven, and smoke pours out. He removes her steaming shoes. The toes are curled upward and dried.
Shoes.
Yeah, they're kind of crisp.
I said under the oven, not in it. Of all the stupid, asinine...
Not in front of Joe.
Oh, how do you suggest I get home?
Well, I could loan you a pair of my shoes, or I'll call a cab. Where do you live?
Delaney Street. And how do I get to the cab?
He looks her over.
I weigh 110 pounds.
Later, he is carrying her out of the building.
When the cleaning woman comes in, tell her to burn all the old papers and put an Arabic in the corner to get rid of that cigar smell.
Cigar smoke.
And scour the ashtrays with ammonia. Oh, and if she wants to take the ink stains out of that burgundy chair...
What chair?
Burgundy, that's the color. She can call me the office extension 1173.
Will you open the door?
You know, I could be a big help to you, McGovern.
Just what I always needed, a girl with turned up shoes, 110.
115.
Yeah. Here. Take these to Delaney Street.
He gives the driver the shoes and pays him. He watches the cab drive away. Later, the little girls from the orphanage are playing in a playground. Some are on a merry-go-round as nuns watch. Others are playing together around the area. Jenny is with Sister Edwitha.
So if I took her to the ball game and we sat in the grandstand out of the sun... You wouldn't see any angels, of course. I'd write the story just that way, and that'd be the end of it. All right. Bridget!
Bridget!
Bridget hops off the merry-go-round, ducks through a hedge, and runs into the Mother Superior.
Oh, Bridget White, Miss Page.
Hello.
Would you like to go to the ball game with her this afternoon?
Can I?
Mm-hmm.
Will we speak to Mr. McGovern?
Well, we can wave. All right, run along. Comb your hair, put on a hat. With a brim!
Bridget nods as she runs inside. Later, a game is underway at Forbes Field. A batter hits to left field.
Bridget and I got pretty chummy during the game, exchanging girlish confidences. The boys in the press box kept showing up with a steady stream of hot dogs and Eskimo pies and asking Bridget if she saw any angels.
Bridget looks onto the field and shakes her head. The reporter returns glumly to the press box and shakes his head at a second reporter. The second reporter hurries to Bridget with the treat.
Vanilla, okay?
Oh, thank you.
Mac, I think that's enough.
How's it going, honey? The angels working yet?
Uh-uh.
Well, now you'll let us know, won't you?
Bridget nods.
Oh, Jenny, how about dinner after the game?
Oh, thanks, but I'm testing a new recipe tonight.
Well, have fun.
Bye.
Do you live alone?
All by myself.
That must be nice.
Why?
I mean, instead of having a lot of kids around all the time. Kids are such a bother, aren't they?
It depends.
I always say, why not live alone if you can live alone? Take like if you had someone around the house all the time. You couldn't even come to the ball game when you wanted.
Not unless I brought her with me.
Bridget looks away thoughtfully and takes a big bite of hot dog. Her eyes suddenly widen.
Oh, now, Bridget, no.
There they come. Out on the field.
There's no one, nothing.
Look, don't you see?
You couldn't possibly see anything down there. Do you hear me, Bridget?
But I do. There's one behind every player.
Oh, no. Come on, get out of here quick.
Bridget and Jenny leave.
They're going. Hey, Jenny. Wait a minute. Honey. Jenny, what's the story?
Look, girl, you're leaving. That's
honey,
all.
Honey, did you see any angels? How many were there, Bridget?
Nine.
As Jenny and Bridget hurry away, the reporters return to the press box and get on their phones.
Reynolds here. Take this. The angels were out in force today, said little Bridget White.
Later, Jenny is sitting in an office at St. Gabriel's, reading a newspaper. The second nun leads McGovern to the room.
Wait in here, please.
I hear the kid's sick. What did you do to her?
Nothing. I think it was just the ice cream and the four frankfurters.
Nice food for a kid. You ought to know better. Why'd you want to drag her out there in the first place?
I didn't drag her. She was dying to go. I only wanted to help.
Help? Fine help. McGovern's angels strike again. What are you trying to do, laugh me out of baseball?
Mr. McGovern, I haven't laughed since the day I met you.
Meanwhile...
Were they boy angels or girl angels?
With a thermometer in her mouth, Bridget points at a doctor.
Boy angels. Did they look like people? Or did they look like the pictures of angels on our little prayer cards?
She picks up her prayer card.
Prayer cards.
Bridget nods, and the doctor thumps her tummy.
Sore, huh?
She nods.
What color robe did they wear?
She looks around, then points at her pillow.
White, eh? You're sure they were angels? They weren't ground keepers. Or they were peanut vendors.
The doctor takes the thermometer.
Angels.
The second nun enters.
Sister, Mr. McGovern and Miss Page, they'd like to see Bridget.
Oh, please. Can they?
I don't see why not. Organically, she's fine. Just a little upset stomach is all. But emotionally, I'm not so sure.
You really think that we should...
He's can do no harm. He's an excellent man.
Sister Edwitha turns to Bridget in a bed.
Bridget, I don't want to alarm you, but we're going to call another doctor. He won't give you any medicine. He'll just ask you a few questions. You understand, don't you?
Sure. You want to find out if I'm wacky.
Sister Edwitha looks at the doctor.
Doctor, I'm sure it's not necessary.
Jenny and McGovern follow the second nun.
Only a few minutes, please.
Sister Edwitha and the doctor pass them in the hall. McGovern points a finger at Jenny.
Don't you go upsetting her.
She frowns at him. They enter Bridget's room and approach her in a hospital bed.
How
How you feeling?
Much better, thank you.
Oh, you just ate too much junk, eh?
It was the nicest time I ever had.
I brought you a present.
Oh, thank you. You shouldn't have.
That's nothing.
Bridget unwraps a package and opens the box inside. She takes out a toy kangaroo.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, well, it jumps, too. If you just squeeze this little thing here at the end, see?
It talks, too.
Imagine.
Well, it's just a kid's kangaroo. I'll take it back and get you a real toy.
Oh, no, please. I love it. But will you come to see me again anyway?
Yeah, sure. Every day, as long as you're sick.
Miss Page, too?
Me, too. Now, I think you'd better get some sleep.
Yeah, good night, Bridget.
Every day while I'm sick?
Of course.
Sure.
Jenny and McGovern exchange glances. Jenny and McGovern tiptoe out of the room. They both look back, and Jenny mouths goodbye before leaving.
The story became a national issue. Everyone was talking about Angel. There were newsreel interviews with baseball celebrities.
Joe DiMaggio, Yankee center fielder. What do you think, Joe?
If McGovern needs any extra angels, we'd be glad to give him a couple of ours.
Ty Cobb, one of baseball's all-time greats. What do you think, Mr. Cobb?
Well, all I can say is that this game of baseball has certainly changed.
Songwriter Harry Ruby, composer of Three Little Words, America's number one baseball fan.
I predicted this at the start of the season when I said, heaven help the Pirates.
Bing Crosby, part owner of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
On a golf course.
You know, I think this Angel stuff's pretty sound. Lots of times folks think someone's watching over them.
He lines up a long putt and taps the ball. It crosses the green, circles the cup several times, and drops in. Crosby looks up.
Thanks.
At the orphanage.
Whenever the team was in town, McGovern paid a visit to the orphanage. And he made good his promise to bring a new present.
They're crowded around a TV set.
Now, if you just go back to your seat so everybody can see.
The girls hurry to their chairs, and Jenny turns off the light.
Just turn this knob, see? Now watch.
The TV picture rolls, then focuses on a wrestling match.
He's got that chin lock again, yanking his head back. The monster is trying to put on a leg crusher.
Very educational.
At a ball game.
When the Pirates climbed into third place, the newspapers laid off McGovern. The Angels were completely forgotten.
A runner is safe on first. The next batter hits a double, and the runner advances to third on a long fly to left field. A Pirates player leaves the on-deck circle, selects a bat, and steps up to the plate.
Tell him to bunt.
Saul rubs his chin with his hand.
Wait, let him hit away.
Hey, in that out!
He pounds his fist into his hand. The pitcher winds up and fires the ball over the plate. As Lou runs to first, a runner scores. The second runner rounds third and slides across the home plate as the catcher tries to tag him.
Hey.
The crowd gets to their feet. Saul smiles at McGovern.
That was a nice switch.
Just a hunch.
McGovern's hat mysteriously tips forward over his face. He looks back at the water cooler with a slight frown and sees slow-moving bubbles drifting upward. He smiles a knowing smile and pulls his hat down snugly on his head. Later, he is walking down a hallway, takes keys from his pocket, and starts to unlock his door when it opens.
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday to you!
Happy birthday, McGovern.
What goes on?
A party!
Yeah, but how did you know?
Oh, Bridget, she looked it up in the sporting news.
Oh.
Oh, hiya, Joe.
He fingers a bow on Joe's cage and frowns at his tidy apartment.
Now, I didn't draw a single thing you'll ever miss.
Don't you like it?
Oh, sure, I like it. Hey, a cake and everything.
Jennifer made it. I turned on the oven.
What do you know? A regular birthday party. Mm-hmm. I haven't had one since I was 10. Believe me, that's a long time ago.
It sure is. The book said
you never mind, honey.
I'll tell you what. On your birthday, I'll give you a party. When is it?
Well, I'm not sure exactly, but the home picked October 5th. That's the only day they had open.
McGovern exchanges a look with Jenny.
Look, you help me in the kitchen, and Bridget, why don't you give Joe a piece of the celery, huh? And a girl.
McGovern and Jenny give each other somber looks, and he follows her into the kitchen.
I hope you don't mind. She's getting such a kick out of it.
No. Why should I mind?
Would you hand me the salt, please?
Hey, what smells so good, I mean?
Ragu of veal a la bignon.
Yeah, fancy stuff, eh?
Mm-hmm. You eat too many steaks, McGovern. Change will be good for you.
Yeah, bignoli smells great. I often wonder who dreams up all these things.
Mrs. Hart, writer Oates of Rawson Avenue.
Is that so?
Mm-hmm. Her favorite recipe, guaranteed to keep men at home. Now, the butter, please. Well, we won again today, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
I suppose you realize there were only 5 games out of first place.
I've heard some talk.
Isn't that wonderful? Just a few weeks ago, we were last. Wonder how it happened?
Angels.
Shh. Parsley, please. Huh? The green stuff, the parsley. Right there. Thank you. I have a different theory, you know.
You have?
Uh-huh. I think it's you.
Me?
Sure, the Pirates are playing as a team. Why don't you take your apron off, honey? Because you're not losing your temper and yelling your head off and swinging on people.
Sister Louisa says, never swing on people. You should turn the other cheek.
Well, there's 2 schools of thought on that. My school recommends getting in the first punch.
Sister Louisa says, turn the other cheek.
You see?
Okay. I suppose she knows best.
Now, you can carry this. Bridget, you take the peas. Now, be careful, they're hot. There.
Bridget and McGovern carry food to the table, and Jenny opens the oven. McGovern starts to sit.
Look out! You'll sit on the present.
Oh!
That one's mine.
Well, I'll save this to last.
He unwraps a long, flat box as Jenny puts food on the table. He holds up a tie.
Well.
Not too loud, is it?
No. Yellow and green's not loud. Now.
He unwraps Jenny's gift.
Well, what do you know? A baseball.
It's not just an ordinary baseball. Jennifer sent it into the clubhouse and all the Pirates signed it. See?
Mm-hmm.
All except Mr. Hellman.
He was in the shower.
Imagine an autograph ball. It's just what I wanted.
They begin filling their plates.
Well, come on. Let's try this.
Jenny looks at Bridget.
Well, what's the matter?
What about Grace?
Grace who? Oh, Grace. Yeah, Grace. I almost forgot. You lead off.
Bridget crosses herself and lowers her head.
O Lord, make us truly thankful for these thy gifts which we are about to receive. Amen.
She crosses herself again and smiles at Jenny and McGovern. He takes a big bite of food and begins to chew. His eyes widen and he gags slightly.
You know, I'm hungry. I hope I fixed enough of everything. Cooking for myself the way I do, I'm never exactly sure how much I should...
Jenny takes a bite and grabs her throat.
Oh, don't eat that.
No, it's delicious.
Oh, no, don't. It's poison. Oh, I've never in all my life. Mrs. Harkrider Oates of Rawson Avenue is certainly going to hear from me in the morning. Keeps men at home, does it?
Maybe she means permanently.
I can't understand it, though. Unless that olive oil... Could it have been rancid? How long have you had it?
What olive oil?
The olive oil in the cupboard. In the bottle in the cupboard.
Neat's foot oil.
What?
Not olive oil, neat's foot oil. I rub it in my glove, keeps the leather soft.
Well, of all the... What's it doing in the cupboard?
Well, I gotta put it someplace. It's wonderful for gloves.
Well, it certainly doesn't do anything for veal.
The peas are fine.
You can't make a meal on peas. Oh, I just feel awful. I should have looked at the bottle. I always look at the bottle.
Wait,
I don't know why.
Don't lose your head. This is my birthday, and I'm not going to have it spoiled by Mrs. Harkrider Oates of Rawson Avenue.
Later, the birthday cake is on a table in John's Steakhouse. Bridget takes a big bite of food.
Is that all right?
She nods. Bales is drinking at another table. He stands and approaches the table.
Well, this is a cozy little scene. Birthday party?
Yeah. Keep moving, huh?
Well, I don't like to intrude, but may I have your autograph, Mr. McGovern, on a check? I got the tab today from my dentist. Repairing bridge work, $180.
Just send me the bill, first of the month.
Ooh, I think you like us, really.
Well, Gil, that's...
Will you stop? Will you stop?
Well, I thought you'd like to see what you're paying for. I beg your pardon.
Look, blow, huh? Please?
Let me explain.
You see, a few weeks ago, Mr. McGovern, in his usual charming, inimitable style, put the slug on me. Didn't you, Guffey?
McGovern stands.
Would you step outside?
I would be delighted.
McGovern?
Jenny touches her cheek.
Oh, sure, sure. Don't worry.
The two men leave the table and approach the hat check girl.
Yeah, what?
Look, I'm having a little birthday. Don't louse it up, huh?
No.
Now you had a couple of drinks, you feel good.
I feel fine. Great shape.
Sure, be a nice guy going home.
Why should I be a nice guy for you? Give me one reason.
Nobody's bothering you tonight.
Nobody will. And if any certain party tries to bother me, I'll hook him in the mouth.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Bayless hits McGovern. Later that night, a taxi stops in front of the orphanage. McGovern looks out the car window with a bruised and swollen left eye. He gets out.
I'll take her in. You stay where you are.
You'll have to carry her.
Up we go.
He carries the sleeping child up the steps to the front door. Sister Edwitha opens the door and he goes inside.
Please.
He turns his back to her as he carries Bridget across the entryway and turns his bruised face away when he puts the child down.
Right up to bed now, dear.
Good night.
Good night.
That's a sweet kid down there.
Did you have a good party?
Nicest time I ever had in my life.
Happy birthday.
Well, thanks.
Bridget leaves and McGovern touches his eye with a handkerchief.
What happens to the kids here, sister?
What do you mean?
Oh, do they stay here forever? Doesn't anybody ever come around and, you know?
Adopt them? Occasionally, not so often as we'd like. They all seem to want tiny babies now.
I'd be afraid.
Were you thinking of adopting Bridget?
Oh, me? No, I just... I couldn't, could I?
Well, it would present certain problems. There's no law against it, of course. But the court usually doesn't permit children to go to unmarried people.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
He looks at Sister Edwitha.
I'll pray on it.
Well, thanks. Well, it's not that I couldn't afford to keep her. I got some dose aid. I just never had anybody to spend it on. But a kid like that ought to have somebody. Well, like a father. Not that I'm any shining example of behavior. There have been some times and... Well, baseball's a pretty tough game, and a lot of people say that I... Well, maybe you heard.
I sat in back of first base one day.
Oh, well, I don't have to tell you. That's all over. Believe me, it's a thing of the past. I keep my mouth shut and my hands in my pockets. No language, not even one fight.
She studies his eye, and he touches it uncomfortably.
You see, sister, we were in this restaurant, and there was this fella... Good night, sister.
She smiles as he walks away.
Good night, McGovern.
Later, the taxi pulls up to a stop in front of an apartment building. McGovern opens the door and helps Jenny out.
Oh, thank you.
Wait for me, will you?
She's really a sweet child. She just adores you. Have you ever thought of adopting her?
Who, me?
Well, I don't see anybody else around here.
Oh, don't be silly. What would I want with a kid around the house? Besides a thing like that, well, it presents certain problems.
Well, this is where I live. What kind of problems?
Problems.
Oh. It's been a wonderful evening. Especially the main event. Bet that's the first black eye you've had in years, huh? You travel around with me, I'll fix you good.
He stares directly at her.
Is my face on crooked or something?
He continues staring.
Well, yours is. You better go home and fix it. And don't believe that beefsteak routine. That's just superstition. What it needs is hot and cold applications, preferably Epsom salts.
He looks at her intently without changing expressions.
Look, you make a move, I'll make a move.
A long time ago, I played third base in Minneapolis. There was a girl in St. Paul, the nicest girl I ever knew. We did a lot of talking, and I made some big plans. But they didn't include a certain shortstop, the one she finally married. It was quite a blow.
I can imagine.
I guess I've been taking it out on everybody else ever since. Good night.
Good night.
He returns to the cab and gets in. Jenny watches with a gentle expression. later, as the little girls are washing up at the orphanage, Sister Edwitha passes Bridget.
Sister?
Hmm?
Is it always right to turn the other cheek?
Certainly. Why?
Mr. McGovern did last night, and he got sloughed something off.
The meek shall inherit the earth.
Toothpaste drips off Bridget's chin as she thoughtfully brushes her teeth. Later, a ball game is underway.
I never missed a game after that. In September, the Pirates met the Giants in the final series. They needed three straight games to win the pennant.
Stay in there, boy. Make a pitch there.
McGovern smiles at Jenny and she waves.
2-2, boy. Make it pitch there.
He looks at Jenny again. The batter hits a line drive into McGovern's face. After the game, she meets him as he leaves the dressing room.
How do you feel?
It's nothing. I don't feel a thing.
You did it again, didn't I? Why'd I have to go and wave at you?
It's nothing. We won, didn't we? Where am I having dinner? I mean, where are you having dinner? I mean us, huh?
You're not going anyplace except home. I've got a cab.
Hiya, Guppy. Nice catch, kid.
You okay? Any permanent injuries?
No, I've been hit in the head 20 times. I feel fine.
Did you see any angels out there, Guppy?
No, I've never seen an angel, but I talk to one regularly.
What did you say?
Sure.
You speak to angels?
Certainly.
Oh, come
Can
on.
We quote you on that?
Why not? An angel sits in back of me in the dugout every day.
Oh, Guppy.
Where are they running?
Let's get out of here.
A headline reads, McGovern entertains angels. Powwow was held in dugout. Guppy claims Seraph's pals. A man in a store reads a newspaper and laughs. A waitress and a customer laugh at a paper in a restaurant. People are reading the article in the streets, in barbershops, and other gatherings. McGovern crumples a paper angrily and throws it down. He hits himself in the forehead and winces. At the orphanage.
Sister.
Hmm?
Isn't it wonderful? I see him and Guppy talks to him.
Bayless is at a radio broadcast.
Believe me, gentle listener, there is more to this than meets the eye. Mr. McGovern's antics, on the field and off, are no longer a source of amusement, but a basis for serious inquiry. His latest peccadillo, an admission to the press that he converses with angels...
Oh, for heaven's sake, you're hitting the head to say anything.
...the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates is unworthy of the high position he now commands. Proof beyond doubt that Mr. McGovern is, to put it charitably... emotionally unstable and guilty of conduct detrimental to organized baseball. But Mr. McGovern's supporters claim his peculiar statement was made after being hit in the head with a line drive. Therefore, he is not responsible.
He admits it.
I would like to ask Mr. McGovern a question. Was he responsible 7 weeks ago in Boston? How about it, McGovern? 7 weeks ago, were you or were you not of sound mind and limb? Beside me in the studio tonight is a man who can answer these questions. Would you tell us your name, please?
Father J. Finley.
What is your occupation, Mr. Finley?
I'm a groundkeeper, Braves Field, up in Boston.
Will you please tell us what you saw in Braves Field about 7 weeks ago?
Well, I see Mr. McGovern.
What time?
I don't know, after the game.
Where was he?
Sitting on second base.
And what was he doing?
He was talking.
Talking to whom?
I don't know. There wasn't anybody there.
And when he was sitting on second base, talking to somebody who wasn't there, where was he looking?
Up.
What did he say?
I don't know exactly. I couldn't hear everything. I was in the dugout. But one thing he said was, I have a right to know the name of my own angel.
He said that? My own angel?
Yes, sir. Then he said again, don't go away mad.
Thank you, Mr. Finley. I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, and Mr. Commissioner, is this the act of a normal, reasonable man? Hang around second base at night and talk to angels? Much as I hesitate to say this, I think that Mr. McGovern should take a long, long, perhaps permanent rest.
McGovern turns off his radio. Later, after a game.
The Pirates
Mets chalked up a victory today, squeaking through by one lone run, playing uninspired ball. They came to life in the final frame to sneak a run over the plate, taking advantage
nice
of a
going,
giant
boys.
Error.
What's eating you?
So we win a ball game, so hooray. I tell you, it's making me jumpy. Angels, angels. Every time I go after a ball, I'm afraid I'm going to trip over something. For 2 cents, I'd quit right now. Shut up. Did you watch McGovern out there looking over his shoulder every 2 seconds? It's scary. For all we know, this guy is off his rocker. He might even be dangerous.
Lay off, will you? Lay off McGovern.
Huh?
I don't care if he's talking defense post. He's trying to be a right guy. Your job is to go out there and play ball for him and keep your mouth shut, understand?
Okay, Saul, okay.
Why, here he comes.
McGovern enters with his hands on his hips, and a trainer turns the radio back on.
And here's the flash that was just handed to me. Arnold P. Hapgood, commissioner of baseball, will arrive in Pittsburgh tonight. He is here to investigate Guffey McGovern. Well, that sounds like bad news for Pittsburgh. With the pennant hanging on tomorrow's game, I'm afraid the Pirates and Mr. McGovern are in a pretty tough spot. The Pirates played mighty shaky ball out there this afternoon. And this hanging over their heads, there's no telling what they'll do.
Later.
It's about my boys. They're getting nervous. Not that I blame them, but if it keeps on like this, they're apt to come apart tomorrow. I thought maybe you might have something to suggest.
Nervous, huh? Well, I wouldn't worry too much about it. It's only natural at a time like this. How are you doing?
Me? Great. I'm in the pink. One game away from a pennant, and they're trying to throw me in the loony bin. I don't sleep nights. I don't eat. Just to make matters worse, I'm fresh out of pitchers.
Oh, that's so?
You know, I used 4 this afternoon. Who do I start tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't worry about it.
Excuse me. You got nothing to worry about. You're all set. With me, it's a little different.
Yeah?
Yeah. Martin's got a bad arm, Clark's on the sick list, and Hellman's an old man. He wouldn't last 2 innings.
Yeah, Saul's pretty tired. Even I couldn't make him look good. 16 years, a lot of pitching in the major leagues.
Well, it's his last one. Next season, I want to send him to the minors.
That won't make any difference to Saul. He won't be around next season.
What?
We're signing him up in the spring.
Saul?
Yeah. Everybody gets to play up here sooner or later.
But Saul, we were friends. At least we used to be. Hellman was a great pitcher once. He pitched a two-hitter in a World Series, you know.
Yes, I know. I was there.
Kneeling on one knee on a base, McGovern looks down sorrowfully. He looks heavenward again.
Excuse me. Good night.
Good night, Guffey.
He leaves. Meanwhile, people are departing a TWA airliner.
This way, Commissioner.
Gentlemen, I have an appointment with all parties concerned tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, so until you hear all the evidence, I have nothing to say.
Mr. Commissioner, the Pirates are playing their last game of the season tomorrow afternoon for the pennant.
I'm aware of that.
Would you think this is the proper time to conduct the investigation?
My dear lady, any time is the proper time when the situation warrants it. Baseball for the people who support it. My desk is piled high with letters.
From New York, sir?
New York. And other places, yes.
In other words, sir, you think that Guffey McGovern has slipped his lid, right?
Gentlemen, the hearing takes place tomorrow morning.
Oh, wait, the hearing was like a courtroom trial. The investigation hinged on 2 points. 1, are there such things as angels? And 2, is it possible to talk to them?
How long have you been practicing psychiatry, Dr. Blaine?
18 years.
You've just heard Mr. McGovern's account of how a group of angels helped his ball team. As a psychiatrist, how did his story impress you?
Belief in celestial beings is a carryover from mankind's ignorance and fear of his environment. Originally, man worshipped the sun, the moon, stones, trees. But with the rise of religion as we know it today, man felt the need of a closer alliance with a supreme being, and so he invented the angel.
Hapgood looks up suddenly.
Invented? Precisely. Just as a hurt child will run to its parent, so will a man turn for comfort to a belief in angels.
And when this belief takes the form of actual conversation with angels, what is your professional opinion?
Well, I'd prefer not to say, but I'd be happy to see Mr. McGovern in my office.
McGovern lowers his eyes.
I think that'll be all, Doctor, and thank you.
Blaine stands and looks down at McGovern solemnly. McGovern winks at him, and Blaine leaves. Jenny crosses the room to McGovern, who is sitting beside Hapgood's desk at the front of the room. She whispers in McGovern's ear, and he smiles and nods.
Mr. Commissioner.
Yes?
I'd like to introduce three witnesses for the defense.
Yes, yes, of course.
Gentlemen. Mr. Commissioner, I do not know any of these gentlemen. My name is Guffey McGovern.
Dr. Eustace Danforth, Trinity Church.
How do you do?
Rabbi Alan Hahn, Temple Israel.
How do you do? Father O'Houlihan, Church of Our Lady,
Queen of the Angels.
Gentlemen, just make yourselves comfortable.
Mr. Commissioner, I suppose you gentlemen know the general idea in back of this inquiry. Well, what do you think? Do you suppose there might be angels?
Right to left. Lead the way, Dr. Danforth. To deny the existence of angels is to deny the word of the Holy Bible, which is specific on the subject. From the ancient Hebrew text, we have the words B'nai Elohim, the sons of God, Kadoshim, the Holy Ones, and Malach... How do you pronounce that?
Malachim.
Thank you, Rabbi. The Malachim, the messengers. All of these may be translated angels. You'll check me on that, Rabbi Hahn.
It was an angel who guided the children of Israel to the promised land. Behold, I send an angel before thee to keep thee in the way. In Psalms again we find an angel, the protector of man, the angel of the Lord, encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them.
Father O'Houlihan?
Seeing as how there are whole coveys of angels flitting through the pages of the Holy Scriptures, both Old and New Testaments, I don't see how I can get out of saying I believe in them. I imagine the commissioner does too.
Oh, please, just leave me out of this.
Mr. Commissioner.
Yes.
Father, would you also believe that they play baseball?
What's that?
Well, Mr. McGovern has testified that angels helped his team.
Well, now, considering all the great wonders that angels have performed, I'd be much surprised if they couldn't play baseball, providing, of course, they had a mind to.
Ah, but would they? With all respect to your cloth, gentlemen, is it likely that one of your angels or a group of angels would lend support to a man like Guffey McGovern?
Is it possible that angels would aid and comfort such a man?
If a man have 100 sheep and one of them should go astray, doth he not leave the 99 in the mountains and go and seek that which is gone astray? Matthew, chapter 18, verse 12.
Besides, the Lord isn't as small-minded as some of us mortals.
The rabbi looks at Blaine.
And now, Mr. Commissioner, I had a short talk with Rabbi Hahn in the elevator, and we both discovered we're seeing a ball game at 1:30, so if you don't mind. Oh, of course not. You'd better hurry. Thank you, sir. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
As Danforth leaves, he looks at Blaine.
If Dr. Blaine would care to see me in my office, I'd be very happy indeed.
Hey, fellas, where are you sitting?
Danforth holds up a ticket.
Anything further that you'd like to add, Mr. McGovern?
Nothing.
Well, gentlemen, I have listened to both sides of this argument, and frankly, I'm baffled. I'm sure we'd all like to believe in angels. I know I would. But only had just one tiny bit of concrete evidence. However...
Commissioner Hapgood looks up as Sister Edwitha enters with Bridget and approaches his desk.
Mr. Commissioner?
Yes?
This is Bridget White. She wants to testify for Mr. McGovern.
Mr. Commissioner, a minute ago you were all set to make a decision. Let's get on with it. I don't want anyone hammering away at this kid. Sister, will you please get her out of here?
If the commissioner wants to hear about angels, he ought to ask someone who's seen them.
Mr. McGovern, what are you afraid of?
All right, you just sit right down here.
Bridget sits in front of Hapgood.
What is your name, little girl?
Bridget White, 8 years old.
Oh, yes. And where do you live, Bridget?
St. Gabriel's Home for Orphan Girls.
You believe in angels, don't you?
Doesn't everyone?
No, they don't.
But I saw them, twice.
And where did you think you saw these angels?
In the ballpark. They were helping the pirates.
You're quite sure about that? You wouldn't just make up a story, would you?
Oh, no. It's bad to lie about anything. But if you lied about angels, I guess that'd be real trouble.
Mr. Commissioner, may I question the witness?
Certainly, certainly, certainly.
Now, Bridget, when you saw your angels, what were they doing?
Well, there was one standing behind Mr. McGovern.
But you didn't see him talk to Mr. McGovern?
No, but I know he must have.
Why?
Because Mr. McGovern said so.
And you think that one of your angels, one of these heavenly messengers, would talk to a man like Mr. McGovern?
Of course. Any angel would be proud to talk to a nice man like Mr. McGovern.
Quiet, quiet, please.
Is that all, sir?
Mr. Commissioner, I hope we're not going to accept this as testimony. The child is obviously prejudiced.
What are you talking about? I will decide what is evidence here.
Isn't it true that you tried to adopt this child? Haven't you recently made a declaration of this intention to the orphan's court?
Suppose I did. What about it?
Why, Mr. McGovern?
There's nothing definite yet. I don't even know if the court will let me have her. You don't just walk in and adopt a child. There's problems.
Oh, there's no problem here, Guffy.
Nevertheless, you wanted to adopt her. Oh, that's nice. It's touching. The little girl who saw the angels now stands up to testify for Mr. McGovern. But isn't she actually testifying for Papa?
McGovern knocks Bayless down and jumps on her. McGovern looks up and keeps fighting. The sister shields Bridget. Men pull the fighters apart. Hapgood looks up as a single white feather floats down and comes to rest on his desktop. He quickly covers it with his hand. He peeks at it, then covers it again.
Gentlemen, I think, in view of the facts, all things considered.
He peeks at the feather under his cupped hand again.
This case is dismissed.
Outside.
Hey, fellas, watch with Guffy.
Read about it.
He got all his marbles?
Sure.
Sure, he was okay all the time. He ain't no more crazy than I am.
A cab driver looks up.
Hey, Guffy, yeah.
McGovern hurries into the driver's cab. Later, he is sitting alone in the back seat. The driver is alone in the front.
That was a nice little fracas you staged, McGovern. Quite a show.
Look, you heard what the fella said. What else can I do?
Huh? You had no right to slug him. I warned you about that twice.
Okay. Keep your shirt. Keep your wings on, huh?
You talking to me?
Just stick to your driving, will you? I only hit him once or twice.
You completely destroyed his bridge work.
All right, I'm sorry.
Well, you ought to be, because when you busted that bridge work, you also busted our agreement.
What do you mean?
We're through with you, Guffy. From now on your own.
Please, don't make jokes.
I didn't say nothing.
It's no joke. We're all finished.
Look, a pennant's hanging on that game today. You can't walk out on me now. I need you.
Kind of a shame, isn't it? But don't worry, you've been on your own a lot of times the last 8 weeks.
I don't like to be on my own. I'm not happy on my own.
You used to be. But I'll let you in on a little secret. You've learned something, Guffy. You don't know it yourself yet, but you've learned that there's more important things in life than winning ball games. We're a little proud of you, boy.
Don't be proud of me. Just be at Forbes Field at 1:30. That's all I want.
Sorry, can't make it. And tell that cab driver to slow down. He's making me nervous.
It's a dirty trick. Who'd ever think that an angel would stoop to such a low-down dirty...
So long, Guffy.
No, listen.
Good luck, boy.
Hey, wait. Come back here a minute, will you?
The taxi pulls to a stop near a curb, and McGovern gets out.
How much do I owe you?
Nothing.
The driver speeds away. McGovern does a double take and goes inside. Later, he is in the dressing room.
You decided who's going to pitch yet?
What?
The boys in the press box are asking. They want to know who's going to pitch.
McGovern looks around and notices Saul.
Hellman. What? I said Hellman!
Saul stands with a determined look on his face.
Let's do it, boy.
The players leave the dressing room. Outside, the stands are packed with fans.
Batter
for today's game, or New York, Barbary catching, Toley pitching, or Pittsburgh, Baxter catching, Hellman pitching.
No, not Hellman! No!
And they say McGovern's not crazy.
Bayless has a swollen lip.
Take care of the bullpen, will you, Pike?
Yeah, sure.
He kneels in front of Jenny and Bridget in the front row.
You see anything, honey?
Bridget looks carefully around the field.
Not you.
He holds her chin gently in his hand, then leaves.
Play ball!
The game begins, and after four innings, New York and Pittsburgh are scoreless.
The Giants come to bat now with the score still 0-0. Hellman has managed to hang on for four innings, but it's just a question of time.
Saul takes the ball, picks up a resin bag, and stares at Baxter, his catcher. He winds up and throws. He watches the ball sail into the outfield.
It's over the left field wall for a home run.
The runner rounds the bases, and McGovern watches solemnly from the dugout. The scoreboard reads 1-0, New York. On the pitcher's mound, Saul wipes his forehead with his arm, adjusts his hat, and faces the batter. Baxter crouches behind home plate, and Saul throws. Saul catches the ball and steps on first base.
There's another hit, a very close decision down there, but he's safe.
McGovern looks back, and Jenny whispers in Bridget's ear. The little girl studies the ball field, then looks at Jenny and shakes her head. They both shake their heads solemnly at McGovern. He looks toward the diamond with a runner on first. Saul looks at home plate, then studies the runner on first as he winds up and throws. The batter hits to second. The fans get to their feet, and McGovern grins widely.
Out of first for a double play to end the inning. Score New York 1, Pittsburgh 0. Mr. Hellman coming in off the mound looks like a very tired man.
Saul walks wearily to the dugout, his face and neck covered in sweat. He looks up into the stands and smiles.
Come on, Vince, boy, let's go to work. Get a hit, boy.
Vince steps up to the plate as Foley winds up. The pitcher covers first, then steps aside as the first baseman steps on the bag.
All right, only one away. Lay into it, Tony boy, lay into it.
Tony takes a pitch for strike one, and McGovern tightens his mouth into a frown. McGovern's mouth drops open as he watches the ball sail toward the right field wall, and the fans get to their feet. A New York fielder catches the ball and throws it in. Baxter folds his arms with a frown. Jenny looks down at Bridget, and they shake their heads.
All right, Lou, get in there, boy. Let's go. Let's go.
Come on now, Lou. Knock it out of the park.
Lou races to first, then rounds to second base for a double.
And then the kick pulls up safe at second. Two away and Rube Bronson coming up. Rube hasn't had a hit yet.
Bayless casually puts a cigarette to his mouth and takes a long draw. Bronson steps to the plate.
All right, Rube, let's get some runs, boy.
Bronson hits a long fly ball into the outfield. A fielder chases it toward the scoreboard. It hits the scoreboard and drops onto the field.
A long, hard hit ball that bounced off the scoreboard for a home run.
Confetti scatters throughout the crowd. Bridget and Jenny hug. Lou crosses home plate and turns to watch Bronson score behind him.
Atta boy, Ruben. It's one for Milwaukee High.
A Pirate player is at bat. He hits a ball to first base and is out. New York takes the field. The game continues through several innings, and Saul stays in the game as pitcher. At the top of the ninth inning, the score reads Pittsburgh 2, New York 1. Pittsburgh takes the field.
How's it going?
I guess I can get three of them out.
Saul walks onto the field.
And here we are at the top of the ninth inning, the final frame with the score still Pittsburgh 2, New York 1. Kelman is taking the mound again for Pittsburgh, though he seems to be tiring badly. This is the Giants' last chance to tag him, and maybe they will.
As the Pirates take their positions, Saul walks slowly out onto the mound. Jenny and Bridget frown as they watch. Saul adjusts his hat, drags his foot through the dirt on the pitcher's mound, and stares down at his catcher at the home plate. Saul nods and winds up. The shortstop makes a leaping catch behind second base for the first out.
One away, boy, one away!
With his mitt under his arm, Saul massages the ball, then rubs his right shoulder.
Hellman's touching that arm again seems to be giving him some trouble. Either it's pain or those giant averages.
Saul wipes his face with his shirt sleeve, and McGovern watches the game closely. Saul faces another batter, nods at his catcher, and winds up. The batter rolls away from a close pitch that hits him in the arm.
Take your base. And he takes his base, hit by pitched ball. Well, Hellman seems to be losing control in there.
Saul rubs his shoulder again, drags his foot through the dirt, and looks toward the dugout. McGovern is leaning against a rail with a firm frown, but doesn't move. Saul faces another batter. The catcher gives him a sign, and Saul nods, looks toward first, and winds up. The ball is caught at the wall.
Two out, a man on first.
Bayless touches his swollen lip with a handkerchief. A man in the dugout leans toward McGovern.
They're getting to him, Guffey. He'll never make it.
McGovern remains motionless. Saul stares at the plate and throws. Oh! The batter takes an inside ball. Jenny has her arm around Bridget as Saul winds up again. The batter runs safely to first.
First and second, two away. The fans are yelling to take Hellman out.
Saul picks up the resin bag and massages the ball.
Roll the bum balls. Get him out of there.
McGovern watches. Saul again peers at his catcher, nods sharply, and stretches. He glances back at the runner taking the lead off second base and steps off the mound. The runner returns to second, and Saul winds up and throws. An outfielder catches the ball and throws as a runner dives at a base.
The throw was not in time and all the runners are safe. Three men on base, two out. And those Pirate fans are really mad now. A hit could win this ball game.
Come on, Helmut, goodbye. Come on, get him out of there. Throw the showers, Pop. Get him out of there. Take him out.
McGovern looks into the stands. Bridget looks at him and shakes her head. He stares onto the field, tightens his lips, and steps out of the dugout. He walks out toward the pitcher's mound.
Well, McGovern has finally made up his mind to take Hellman out of the game, but it may be a little late.
He reaches the mound and takes the ball from Saul.
What do you think, Saul? Can you do it?
Well, I'm tired. I'd sure like to try.
Get that
It's your ball game.
He gives the ball back and leaves the mound. The players return to their positions.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. McGovern has just pulled the bonehead play of his career. He's leaving Hellman in.
Fans are shaking their fists in the stands.
And coming up to the plate now is Dobby Rascala, who leads the league in runs batted in. If he bats one now, Mr. McGovern had better leave town.
Rascala steps to the plate. McGovern leans on the railing and watches from the dugout. Saul massages the baseball and circles on the mound as he watches the runners. He puts on his glove, leans forward toward home plate, and takes the catcher's sign. He nods, winds up, and throws.
Connected with that one.
Saul warily stares toward his catcher and nods sharply. He glances at third base before pitching.
Strike two. Rascala steps up to the plate again. It only takes one to hit it. Heldon's taking his time. He's a very tired pitcher right now.
McGovern peers out at the field, and Jenny and Bridget watch anxiously from their front row seats. Saul's face is covered with sweat. He removes his hat and wipes his sleeve across his forehead. He looks toward third base, then winds up and throws. The batter swings and misses, and the Pirate dugout empties onto the field. Fans leap from their seats, and confetti fills the air. Jenny hugs Bridget, and the scoreboard shows Pittsburgh winning 2-1. Fans jump up and down in the stands, and the players carry Saul off the field. They put him down in front of McGovern.
Thanks, Duffy.
For what?
McGovern's smile fades as he watches Saul walk down into the dugout. McGovern looks heavenward.
You're getting a good man.
Well, there you have it. Final score, Pittsburgh 2, New York 1. And, of course, a pennant for the Pirates. Well, I hope Mr. McGovern's Angels are pleased with the way things turned out. Are you happy up there, little Angels?
Why don't you shut up?
Bayless's hat slides over his eyes. He slowly straightens it as he stares upward and nervously backs away from the microphone. Later, the stadium is empty as McGovern, Jenny, and Bridget walk up the steps into the upper decks. They smile at each other, then stop and turn toward the empty field below them.
It was really true, wasn't it?
Well, somebody must have helped me. Not only on the ball field, either. Look what I got.
He smiles at Jenny and Bridget.
I wonder who they were. Walter Johnson, John McGraw, Christine Matthews, Eddie Collins, Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth. Great names. Great guys.
They smile at each other, then leave the empty stadium. Thompson for the Emmy Award-winning Narrative Television Network. This is Tim Shadd.